Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Doop, 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 doop. Doop, 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 doop. Ain't nobody love me better.
Remember who sang that?
Makes me happy. Makes me feel this way.
That was Chaka Khan. Chaka Khan, Chaka Khan. she was amazing. And there's a great clip. I listen to her all the time. I love Chaka Khan. I got one of those, you know, one of those messages on Facebook the other day, you know, give us your top 10 albums over 10 days. You know, you're not to say why you loved it. You just got to give us the album cover. And so I think I'm going to put one of her albums up. I'm on about day 5.
Okay.
And
there you go.
And it's funny, you know. Yeah,
it got you to thinking, didn't it?
It got me a thunkin'. And a couple of weeks ago, we were told by some of our mates, some of my old raver mates, to jump onto Netflix and watch a Netflix series called White Lines.
Oh yes.
Oh my God! So I sat down with my wife, and I reckon my wife left me about 4 times during that show.
she came over to visit me the other day, and she was talking about it.
She was talking about it. Yeah, she left me about 4 times during that show.
She fell in love with
one of the characters in the show called Boxer.
I mean, if anybody sees him, you can understand. Yeah.
There's a love making scene in there that, you know. You know, it's pretty full on. Yeah, and
it's, cool.
It's where Boxer picks the girl up and he, you know, he's holding her. And then the next day, and just goes to me, why don't you do that with me? And I'm like, what? And she goes, why don't you? I said, because, you know, and, you know, I only weigh about 70 kilos. And, you know, you're probably about the same weight as me, love. And, you know, but we laughed about it. And then I said, we can create some sort of winch system in the bedroom, you know. I can put up a scaffold and we can see, hey, how you going up there, love? You all right? You ready? I'm going to lower you down. Okay, you okay? You're losing the romance. But some of the music in there just took me back to me raver days, mate, you know.
Yeah, because it was set in Ibiza, right? And so it had all those old techno tracks that used to, and like Age of Love.
Yeah, well, the timing is kind of out a little bit. If you understand that era, the timing is out from when some of those songs came out to when they were leaving Manchester to go over to Ibiza. But it's really had mixed reviews, but I was absolutely enthralled. I loved it. And, you know, as I was sitting there watching some of it, it was like, you know, it's crazy because your head goes, oh my God, if I could just go back here. Oh my God, I wish I didn't have kids and, you know, it's just terrible.
Take me back 20 years.
I just want to go back. Can we just go there? And I know Andrew's like, oh my God, like we would just totally go there and we would just take over that whole place and we'd just take over those dance floors. But, you know, it's a funny thing, you know, that whole era of what happened back there and to be alive during that era was absolutely insane.
I was alive during that era, but wasn't in the same situation as you because you were all into the rave scene at the time. So talk about
Look, I'd come out from Ireland and my mum and dad had gone home and left me here, and then I moved into a place called the Pink Palaces in Smith Street in Highgate, and I started hanging out with this guy, and he took me to my first rave, and it wasn't really a rave, it was a nightclub. It was the Berlin Club, and the Berlin Club was just like insane. It only lasted for 2 years, voted by Mix Mag as the number one club in the world to play in for those 2 years.
We joke around, you and I, because we were living in such different worlds at the time, right?
Yeah.
And the first time I was out on my own was when I was 18, and the place I went was the Berlin Club, but I went to see 1927.
Right.
Play live, and then probably once that had finished, you were there like two hours later dancing.
Yeah. Two hours later, I was standing in the middle of a dance floor and two or three ecstasy tablets in and then trying to drill a hole in the floor with my feet with a pool of sweat around me. And I remember like when it happened, it just overtook. It literally just overtook my life. It was like it changed. I remember the first time I had you know, LSD, I went to work on the Monday morning, and how I just saw all the guys, because I used to work for the West Australian Mint at the time, how I saw the security guards, and they were looking at me going, I was changed. Like, there's something right. Is he all right? Because he's not himself. And what had happened was my mind had just opened. It was like, I just felt like so enthralled and amazed that there was this scene that was, and I felt so blessed to be a part of this music scene that was emerging out of London and out of Europe, but also out of San Francisco, you know, and it hit Western Australia, and Western Australia was the mecca for rave music in Australia, because there was such a large British contingency and community here in WA, and it was from here that it spread out to Sydney, etc. But you know, I remember going to my first rave, and what would happen is we'd go down to a nightclub called, we'd be told that there was going to be some flyers handed out. And, you know, the guys would be walking around the streets of the arcades in the city, also through Northbridge, and the Carillion Arcade, you know, was where a lot of the young people hung out, skaters, ravers, spray painters, you know, young crims, you know, that's where they all hung out. And you'd go there, and the guys would be talking about there's a rave on the weekend, and there'd be small flyers handed out talking about the rave, but not telling you where the location was. And then you'd be told that the location would be dispatched at the Freezer nightclub. And the Freezer nightclub, which is on, I think it's on William Street. And we'd turn up at the Freezer nightclub at about 8 o'clock, maybe 8:30. And then first there'd be 10 people, then there'd be 20 people, then it'd be like 500 people, then it'd be 1,000 people. Like, the place would just, there'd be people everywhere. And then somebody would walk out with a handful of flyers, and they just throw them out in the air. They'd be just throwing these flyers everywhere, and then all the guys and kids would run and grab a flyer, and then we'd all belt down to our cars and jump into our cars and start driving towards a warehouse or a paddock.
How often did that happen? Because I knew that was going on, but how often did that happen? Was it every weekend, or was it just a specific? Like, how did you know that something was happening that night? Was it because you'd been in the arcade and they told you?
You'd hear about it in the nightclub scene, right, but also because you'd be in the city and you'd start to hear murmurs or rumours that there was a rave going to happen.
And at this time, but they weren't going
to
give away.
And you have to understand, when they set these raves up, the raves weren't small setups. You know, they weren't weren't somebody turning up with a stereo.
It was a massive warehouse.
Huge. And they'd be like 2 weeks, setting it up, getting it all ready, And, you know, when you'd get in there, you would know there was semi-loads of equipment would have been brought in. And, you know, it would have on the flyer, I think it's called the K, what K the sound system would be. Would that be right, John? It'd be 10K or 12K sound system. Is that how they refer to the speaker setups in these parties or in which shows?
That's the size of the speaker.
Right, because they would be boasting about this K of sound system will be at this particular party, and I don't, maybe that's what it was. It's a good brand. So you turn up there, and like there'd be lines of people up the street, and you'd make your way in, you'd pay your fee, and you'd head inside. And like I'd walked into parties, and you just walk in and you're looking around, and the setup was just insane, you know. And then you'd walk in, and then it was like you'd be standing in the middle of the dance floor, or you'd be with your buddies and your friends, and people were, you know, were really, 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 really high. Like, fuck, they were high, you know. And you'd be standing, you know, dancing, and everybody would be exchanging Vicks masks and Chopper Chops and hugging each other, and you know, the music would just be going bananas, and you know, lots of people were on different types. Some people were on, you know, LSD, some people were on ecstasy, some people were using speed, you know. There was, and the funny thing was that this went on untouched for a couple of years. The cops had no idea. Every now and then they would pile in and they'd try to shut down a warehouse, but it was normally too late, and it would always happen as a result of a complaint of some sort. But A lot of the time, the cops had no idea what was going on. Like, I remember sitting outside the Berlin Club, and kids would be lined up the street, sitting on the street, like, off their faces on drugs. And the cops would be walking past with and completely oblivious to what the hell was actually happening. Mm. And but it was literally the emergence of, you know, electronic music. I mean, the true emergence of electronic music was the Beatles were the first one to start to cut up tracks and mix tracks, which I think was in Sgt. Pepper's, what was that?
Lonely Hearts.
Lonely Hearts. Is it Sgt. Pepper's Lonely? Was that the album? So that was the first time that music started getting cut in on top of itself, and records went backwards and forwards, and that was the emergence of that sort of electronic music and the fiddling with electronic music. But to be around in that scene and to be part of that scene when it happened was absolutely fantastic. And for me, I mean, it only really went for about 5 years, and then I was out of the scene. But I think it leaves such a mark on you.
You talk a lot about it because of the fact that there was a lot of, I suppose, especially because you were young, you came out here, you had been left alone, you know, because your parents went back home.
Mm.
There was something that happened in that era and in that time where the music brought everyone together. Mm. And because I know this whole conversation started off the back of you talking about the putting the albums up that influenced you, right?
Yeah.
But that the music made a massive difference in like, and I've been to Tomorrowland, and that was phenomenal.
Mm.
But you look at something like that.
How many thousand people go to that?
I think it's about 180, I think.
And then how does that work? Does it go all night?
It goes three days. So it was a 3-day event.
Right.
They now do it over 2 weekends, and everyone flows from everywhere to get to Belgium for this.
Does it run non-stop, or does it?
It starts at 11 o'clock and finishes at 1 a.m. 11 a.m. in the morning and finishes at 1 a.m. in the morning.
And then what? Everybody pulls home.
And then goes home and then comes back. So it's 3 days. But there's people that stay.
180,000 people.
There's three. I don't know if it's 180,000 at once or three lots of 60. I don't know how it works, but there was a lot of people. A lot of people, and from all different ages, from different parts of the world. But as we were there, and when you're there, you look at the DJs and you look at what's going on. The first day I went to all of the set, I went to all of the stages. I just, you know, just went around everywhere. The last 2 days, I just stayed at the main stage area, and I had the VIP in the VIP area, which makes a massive difference if you're with that many people. But when you're there, and the first day I was in the crowd, and when you're there and you see what the DJ is able to do with the audience, and you see how everybody is one, like I didn't see any fights, I didn't see any, you know, everyone was just all together, do you know what I mean? And you see how they come together, and the music is really just such a unifying aspect, do you know what I mean? And then I remember at one point everybody got down, like, you know, bobbing down on squatting down, and then when the beat dropped, the whole place just erupted and everyone jumped up at the same time, and they did that a couple of times, and it was just phenomenal. But I remember you talking a lot about the old rave days and realizing how it was something that really brought people together, you know, having that community, having that camaraderie, having that, you know, I don't know, that connection through the music, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what it did was that it unified, music brings people together. It's a very tribal thing. You know, if you look at any of the ancient tribes, like, you know, through Peru, through Mexico, music and beat and rhythm was all part of it. You know, even when they're brewing ayahuasca, you know, it's all done with music and beat and drums. And it's they take 3 steps to the right and then they take 3 steps to the left, and they just move around in a circle all the way around as they're brewing, you know, the actual brew. And, you know, it's always been a rhythm, a tribal thing. And I think that's what was happening back then, because, you know, I think.
So do you think it was more, I mean, obviously the back in those days and back at the time when you were at that age, having that freedom, the drugs would have played a role in that because of the fact that I see the drugs in that respect, because obviously we're talking about it in a recreational perspective, not in an abusive perspective, right? So in that respect, I see a lot of people who use them in that respect, in the sense that it just it's like alcohol or it's like other things. It just kind of releases your inhibitions. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It lets you kind of have that.
Well, it takes freedom. It takes you out of your mind.
Yeah.
You know, it takes you, it gives you another experience of consciousness, you know, but that's been happening for
years and years,
you know,
and years.
That's
without,
been, you know, apes did the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, elephants get drunk in the forest in Thailand when fruit falls and you know, flaments on the ground.
What do you think played the biggest part in that whole connection thing? Was it the fact that it was this? Was it the fact that everybody was on the same page?
I think
kind
it would
thing?
Be wrong to try to separate it down to what played the most important part in it. I think it was a meld pot of everything, but also the fact that we were coming out of the 80s. You know, Britain was coming out of a recession. We were coming out of the 80s, and you know, the music was, it was just it was like the perfect mix. The music, it was the right time for people to start to let go. You know, sexism, racism, homosexuality was becoming, you know, part of the norm. Was becoming, it was the beginning of that unifying. But you know, it's that whole thing we keep talking about. We're in an age of unification. Mm. We're in an age of coming together. A light age. Light is just one thing, and this was just, you know, it was the same thing that was happening 100, 200, 300, 400, 500 years ago, further back thousands of years. It's a tribal thing, just with bigger groups of people, you know, using drugs to be able to escape, but also to assimilate.
But I think it's not just, but I don't think it was just the drugs. I think it was the music.
Oh, yeah, for
sure. You could have the drugs and not the music, because the music really brings that out in people, you know, having that. I don't know, there's something that happens when you've got that.
Yeah. Well, a DJ brings you up and up and up and up and up and then plateaus you, and then he'll watch and he'll bring the crowd down, 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 and then he'll do that throughout the night. And the skill of a DJ is, it's like, how well can the DJ get the crowd to let go, you know, to connect and to unify with him and, you know.
What do you think was the most impactful part of being alive and going through that experience for yourself? And how do you think that that's, because I didn't have that experience, like I said, like I, that wasn't my.
I think the most impactful moment was the first time that I did an LSD trip.
No, I don't mean that. I mean, what is, I get that. I mean, now, back then, what do you think was the, what impact has that had on you now? It might still be the same
now,
answer.
I think,
yeah.
Well, I think in terms of, I mean, everything I do in my life was impacted by what happened back then. Everything how I think, how I associate with people, how I treat my kids, the music I listen to in the house, how open-minded I am with my family, with my clients, with the staff, how I see the world. It impacted everything, you know, because until I had that experience, I got that I was completely asleep, but I also got that, you know, so many people were asleep. I mean, it's ridiculous to think now, but the first time you have an LSD trip, you have that trip and you think afterwards, fuck, everybody needs to do this. Everybody needs to do it. As I said, it's ridiculous to think that. But back then it was just so like, wow. You know, holy shit, I thought this way my whole life, and now there was a new, completely new way to see life and consciousness and matter and the world, because matter shifts in front of your eyes. It's insane, you know? And so, and then what that did was then that opened me up to be able to sit with a stranger and conversate with a person.
Do you think that's what
beautiful.
It did? That helped you become more open and more connected? Because I know we've spoken about this before, about the fact that, you know, what we aim for people in our seminars, and I think one of the takeaways with what we do in our seminars is that people all feel like they're together, they're connected in some way. They don't feel like, they don't come in and feel like they've just had an individual experience, which is what they do. They have an individual experience, but they feel like they've been a part of a collective that's had that experience, which I think really stems back from those days for you, because it was, sure, it's an individual experience, but it's also having your individual experience with everybody else.
Yeah.
And
you're not going through this wow moment on your
own. On your own.
You're looking
correct.
At someone else and they're looking at you going, wow. And you're going, wow.
And you
hunger for that sense of connection and that sense of conversation. And it was beautiful. Like, it was love.
Yeah.
You know, it was just love in another way. But you loved people. You know, everybody was just, there was, nobody gave a shit. about anything. You know, nothing mattered other than that moment and the music, and you were in complete states of flow.
Yeah.
It was selflessness, timelessness, effortlessness, and it was just rich in its conscious experience of what could happen with that music and in that moment when there was just everything else was gone. It was it's just this moment. And then this praise of this God behind two turntables, you know, that DJ, him or her, they were God, you know. And then out of that, you had God bands emerge, like you had the Prodigy emerge. Like the Prodigy were amazing, you know. Like I saw the Prodigy, the first time I saw the Prodigy was 1991, and I saw them in Dublin in the Point Depot. And when I walked in there, there was a huge fly hanging out of the ceiling, and they came out on stage, and they were bananas. Like I can't remember the chap who just died 2 years ago. Can you just find out who the chap from the Prodigy was, just died 2 years ago? Keith, that's right. Keith, yeah. And Keith came out on stage in a friggin' straitjacket and was running around and spent the whole night in a straitjacket, running around screaming at the audience, you know? And it was just the music though was just so amazing. And these guys were so into it, you know? And that was the emergence of kind of punk and, you know, and kind of rock, but also electronic music. You know, it was insane. And then, you know, you had Utah Saints, and then before all them, you had 808 States, and you know, like just, you know, then you had Massive Attack, and then, you know, just insane. I just friggin' loved all that stuff.
So, what was I going to say? I had a question there. So, what do you think? Like, why do you think? Because how I see it now is that was a formative part of your life in terms of those years, in terms of having that connection, in terms of, and I know, like, even when we hang out, you the first thing you want to do is, as soon as we're hanging out, is you want to play music. You want to be like, get on,
put,
and do you remember this one? And who's saying that? No, get on to your, the outside stereo system, and you're playing music. And when I come, and when I'm staying over, like the first, you know, on a weekend, there's like techno music playing in the background while we're cooking breakfast and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
So the first thing I want to do is, you know, get on, play the music and have that experience. So it's like, but I think now, I don't know, I just see that, I see that was such a formative part of you and what you bring and what you love. And you've just, I think that with what we do, we've just taken that to another level in terms of doing and finding a way to do that in a different way, through the seminars.
For sure, 100%. Through the seminars and stuff. To be able to connect with people and let them feel love and that nothing else matters.
Mind you, people feel like they're in a rave when they come to some of our seminars.
Because we play rave music. People come up to us all the time and go, fuck, man, what was that album? Can I get your soundtrack? Where'd you get your music from? I just love it. It's like, well, you know, when you're an old crusty demon, crusty raver.
Yes.
So, and then, you know, what goes up must come down, you know.
Literally,
what goes up must come down. And then from there, it
well, the Berlin Club didn't last too long, did it?
But 2 years.
But still, you know, it was good while it lasted, hey?
When the Berlin Club closed down, everybody piled onto a boat and there was a rave on the boat called Splash. And that was really the end of it. And I remember people sitting there in tears, you know, because they knew the club was over, everything was done. This was a new era. And then it became, you know, that was an underground.
So I went to
that was an underground era. That was underground. And people don't understand what underground is, but there's whole underground scenes, you know, and this was a complete underground scene that then slowly but surely, you know, first it was ridiculed by the media and it was ridiculed by the music industry. And now it is the music industry. You know, it emerges out. It influenced hip hop. It influenced, you know, hip hop influenced techno. It was
crazy. Being at the Berlin reunion. I don't think you were there that night. I was with a couple of the guys.
25 years.
And it was so funny because you could see everyone was our age and you could see the mothers who'd just been let out for like two, you know, who'd got a free pass for like a couple of hours.
That happens,
you know what I mean?
At my local park every
Friday. And the accountants that are there, you know, with their like, you know, think that back in the day they were totally different, but here they were reliving their youth, you know. It was very funny.
One quick last side story, but I had two mates, right, that used to just dance. You'd go in and they'd be dancing. They'd dance for 12 hours.
Yeah.
And both of them damaged their knees right, within a 2-year period from dancing so much.
Really?
Literally. From just getting so wasted and just standing on the dance floor and dancing so much. And they both damaged their knees.
Like, it's good to have a good dance though, isn't it?
Love it.
You got to get it out there.
Love
and it. All right.
Well, rave on, people.
If you found this information inspiring, make sure you subscribe and tune in to the next Dorothy and the Dealer podcast.